Broadcasting around the province of British Columbia, this is The Phil Good Show on CKNW News Talk 980. Now, here is Bill Good.
March 17th, the by-election in Vancouver Quadra. Stephen Owen has moved on. And in a few minutes, we'll hear from the candidates who are vying for election in Vancouver Quadra. But first, Rebecca Scott, our producer, who has a profile of the riding and actually lives in the riding.
I do.
Tell me a little bit about Vancouver Quadra.
All right, so Vancouver Quadra looks like the tip of your finger, and basically it includes everything from UBC grounds all the way east to about, I believe, Oak or around there, sort of mid-west Vancouver. So it's UBC, Point Grey, Dunbar, Carisdale, Shaughnessy, South Van, that sort of neighborhood. A couple things about the demographic. About 100,000 people, a little more than 100,000 people live in Vancouver Quadra. It is a unique riding in a couple of respects. First, 36% of people who live in Vancouver Quadra are immigrants. Chinese Canadians make up the largest percentage of that immigration community. This is significant because historically and generally, Chinese Canadians vote liberal. And if you look at the past several elections, that certainly seems to stand. We'll see what happens in this upcoming by-election. Another interesting thing about Quadra is that it has the second highest proportion of university graduates in the country. Not a big surprise. UBC is in Quadra. But you'll see when you take a look at our candidates, all have academic backgrounds. Most still are a part of the academic community. Another thing that you need to know about Vancouver Quadra, it's Canada's sixth wealthiest riding. The average income is just over $100,000. This is the neighborhood where you've seen teardowns sell for over $1 million. So this is a fairly wealthy riding as well. Traditionally, Vancouver Quadra has voted centrist, and they like centrist candidates. This differs from the rest of the province, where you see a polarization of votes, either far to the right or far to the left, whereas Vancouver Quadra tends to vote down the middle. You could see this being a problem for parties like the Conservative Party. And if you look at numbers in elections in the past, it's interesting, and I'll hand these over to you, Bill, in just a moment. But before the Reform Party and the Conservative Party merged, you see quite a few votes going to the Reform Party, quite a few votes going to the Liberal Party tending to come out on top. After they merged, the votes for the Conservative Party dropped off quite significantly, with those remaining votes going to parties like the NDP and the Green. They picked up quite a few votes. So what that tells us is that a reform-run Conservative Party is not appealing to Quadra voters. So the question in this election is going to be, can candidates like Deborah Meredith pull those traditionally centrist Liberal voters back over to the Conservative Party? And you're about to introduce our candidates, but just be aware of our candidates. Again, I mentioned their academic background, also many business backgrounds here in the studio. So we'll see how they seem to fit in with the general demographic of the riding.
So it's a well-educated, well-off, large proportion of immigrants. In recent history, it's been a Liberal stronghold, but before that, it was a Conservative constituency, so it's going to be very interesting. I'm going to introduce each of the candidates, and we'll start with Joyce Murray, because Stephen Owen was the incumbent, so it has been most recently Liberal. So Joyce Murray, former provincial cabinet minister, now running for the Liberals federally. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Bill.
Any quibbles with what Rebecca had to say about the riding?
I think that was a pretty good snapshot. Has been Liberal for about 23 years, and it's my intention to continue that proud tradition.
And what do you say to the voters in Quadra? Why should they stay with the Liberal Party?
I think the voters in Quadra, as in the rest of Canada, want to be proud of Canada. We want to be optimistic about our future. And what I'll be talking about during the campaign is the Liberal vision for the future, the Liberal vision that has to do with having a prosperous nation, defeating the deficit, which we did 12 or 13 years ago, but making sure that we also carry out our responsibilities to people who are less fortunate, social justice, and at the same time see the environmental challenges as a key thing that we need to address and will address in the coming years.
You think we're going to see an election this year?
Well, I know that will be a big topic of conversation over the coming weeks. I don't like to predict. I think that the Canadians have not been craving another general election, and the Liberals will take a look at what's in the budget. I believe that the Prime Minister would like to see government fall on this coming budget, and he's probably planning to offer a lot of goodies to bring some votes his way, but we'll take a look at what's in the budget, and the Liberals will make a decision based on what they see.
Deborah Meredith is the Conservative Party candidate. She's in studio this morning. Good morning. Step up to the microphone. And tell me why you think people should vote Conservative.
Well, Bill, I've knocked on hundreds and hundreds of doors in Vancouver Quadra so far, and I found that there's a great deal of satisfaction with the hardworking, principled approach of the Stephen Harper Conservative government. And I'm also finding that voters seem to be responding to the same issues that the Stephen Harper government is concentrating on. So lower taxes, less crime, a sensible and realizable approach to the environment, and effective and excellent, timely health care.
You think we're going to see an election this year?
Well, every prediction I've made about what's going to happen is wrong, and just about every prediction anybody's given me about what's going to happen is wrong, so I wouldn't dare. I think that the Harper government is committed to staying in government until October 2009, unless the government's brought down by the opposition.
You talk about excellent and timely health care. Is that what you're finding when you go knocking on doors? Because I keep hearing of people who can't get a family doctor.
I think people are concerned about access, not only universal access, but timely access to excellent health care.
But what are the Conservatives doing to ensure that happens?
Well, I think that the challenge will be to interpret the Canada Health Act in a way that provides for a variety of different health care models so that private actors can compete to deliver the very best health care that's available.
Rebecca Code is the NDP candidate. Tell me a little bit about you.
Okay, good morning, Bill. I'm running for the NDP in Vancouver Quadra. I'm young. I'm looking at the direction we're heading in Canada right now, and I can see that we can't stay on the political path we're on right now. Issues like climate change, I mean, there's a lot of disappointment, especially in Vancouver Quadra, where the home of the David Suzuki Foundation. People are looking at our government to take action on climate change, and they've been disappointed for over 10 years now. We haven't made the necessary investments in health care and in education, and so I'm throwing myself into this race, and I'm hoping to bring a new perspective to politics in Ottawa right now. People looking for a more long-term perspective, they are looking at a candidate that's going to lead on these issues.
You would acknowledge that you've got a pretty uphill battle in Vancouver Quadra. I don't think it's ever elected a Democrat.
No, Vancouver Quadra is an uphill battle for the NDP, that's for sure. But if there's one thing we should know by now about politics, it's that nothing is predetermined.
Dan Grice is a Green Party candidate. I don't think there's been a Green Party candidate elected anywhere. So what?
In Canada.
In Canada. So what brings you to this riding and to this election? How old are you?
Oh, I'm 27.
Okay, give me just a little bit about your background.
I'm a graduate of UBC. I've been a director of Fair Voting BC, working on electoral reform in the province for a number of years now, and very familiar with business. I've been a corporate account manager for a couple of years now, running my own consulting firm. And what has brought me really into, at least giving me energy in this upcoming by-election, is that really Canadians are treating this by-election as a referendum on each party's climate change policies. And I think everyone who I talk to, and I seriously about the various plans on the board, realizes that the Green Party is the only one with a comprehensive vision that's going to get there. And we've just been supported by numerous, the whole Department of Economics at UBC just came behind our version of a carbon tax. The report from the National Roundtable on the climate and on environment and the economy just came out this week with another report supporting our vision on this. And I think we are the only party going into this by-election with a real comprehensive plan and the growing support from Canadians. And I think we're about to see things change.
What would your carbon tax look like?
Our carbon tax that we propose is $50 a ton. And what we really want to see...
Wait a minute. You knock on my door and I say, well, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
What does that mean to me?
Well, that's exactly... What that means for you, and this is what we ask Canadians, is do you recognize that there's a problem with global warming? And Canadians say yes. And do you think that everyone in this society should be paying their fair share? And Canadians are saying, yes, we're willing to pay a little bit more. That means we're willing to pay a little bit more on gas, but more so in our industry. We want industry. We want the big emitters to pay their fair share. And we have, right now, we've got millions of tons of carbon dioxide emissions going into the air with absolutely no cost associated to them. People want market mechanisms to deal with this, and I think this is the key issue on our table.
Okay, let me ask the other candidates. Does anybody disagree?
No, I agree that people want polluters to pay, and people believe this is a critical issue. And
this is Joyce Murray.
And so does the Liberal Party. And actually, that I think ties into a recent major environmental conference in Bali, where we had a very embarrassing performance by the Canadian leaders. And Mr. Harper and his minister, John Baird, were more regressive and more obstructive on this issue than even George Bush. I mean, people couldn't believe it. So it was a real embarrassment. We were ashamed, I think, to be Canadians. I was there and witnessed that debacle on the part of the Conservative government.
Deborah Meredith, first of all, do you agree with Mr. Grice that this is the number one issue? When you go door to door, is climate change something that people are talking to you about?
I think climate change is certainly very important, especially amongst certain groups, not all groups. I think some groups in Quadra people are very concerned about crime. But I have heard that people in Quadra really do want action on pollution and carbon emissions. And then the question is, what's the best way to do that?
And do you think the Conservatives have been leading the way on this, or are you embarrassed, as Joyce says, at your government's performance?
Well, I think if the Liberals had been more interested in this issue 10 years ago, we'd be in a better position than we are now, because during the Liberal era, emissions did nothing but increase at, 35% over the time that they were in power. I think I'm not embarrassed at all about the Conservatives. I think they've an answer to this program necessarily has to be global. And mandatory regulation is definitely the way to go, and that's what the Conservatives are pushing. And it has to be mandatory regulation if it's to be effective that's agreed to on a global basis.
Rebecca Code, NDP.
Right. Well, it is certain that people across Canada are looking for action on climate change, and they're looking for someone to lead on this issue, and it doesn't matter. I mean, who's in government? No one has taken any action on this issue yet. And as for the best way to go about it, I hear people talking about a carbon tax. Now, that is one way to address climate change. That is one market mechanism. But the NDP is wrong to say there's no one in Ottawa right now with a comprehensive plan. The NDP has a plan that addresses emissions from households to industry. And the problem with the tax is it doesn't provide alternatives. So you can make it more expensive to drive your car, but the reality is that people still need to get to work. That's not an investment in transportation. You can make it more expensive to heat your home, but that's not the same thing as offering a pool for people to retrofit their homes and so that they can conserve energy. I'm looking at this from the perspective of a young person. We are looking at what kind of planet we're going to inherit, and I have talked to so many people in my riding about this issue, and they want to pass on a better country to their family. They want their children to inherit a Canada that is going to prosper in the future, and the current direction that we're taking right now, we can't sustain it.
Now, one, issues facing the voters in a by-election in Vancouver Quadra, March 17th, 604-280-9898. We've talked about climate change. Deborah Meredith, who's the Conservative Party candidate, talked about crime. Is crime a big issue in Quadra? And if so, why? Quadra, as described by Rebecca, would seem to be a pretty well-off riding. People well-educated, living in million-dollar homes. Not everybody, but I think that's the average house price today. Is crime a big issue in that riding?
I think it's a really big issue, and I'm hearing it on almost every doorstep. You know, Vancouver is the property crime capital of North America, and a lot of that property crime visits Vancouver Quadra. In fact, in the very quiet, lovely residential street that I live in, that's about the property crime capital of Vancouver. And people are well aware of that, and they want action. And the Conservatives, with their targeting serious violent crime bill, is taking action to curb crime, and it's the only party that's taking action to curb crime.
And is property crime serious crime?
Well, I think it stems from serious crime. And so a lot of property crime stems from mental health issues, from drug addiction, and drug addiction is fueled by the cost of procuring drugs, and it's all part of the drug crime and drug-related culture.
I suspect property crime becomes serious crime when it's your property. Joyce Murray?
A couple of thoughts on that. One is that the Conservatives seem to be embracing the U.S.-style approach to this, which is build a lot more prisons and have a lot more prisoners in prison, and I think that is not the solution for Canada.
So what's the solution? Somebody breaks into your car or your home, and it's the 14th time they have been charged with a crime. What do the Liberals propose?
Well, Bill, I would say that property crime is serious crime because it infringes on people's sense of safety, and it is a problem. I hear about it in Quadra as well. But we need to take a more integrated approach. Mr. Harper, one of the many promises that he's broken has been to put more police on the streets. It certainly hasn't happened. I mean, there's a range of promises, whether it's income trusts or reducing wait lists. But one of them that I was surprised was never carried out was to increase the number of police on the street.
Is that a federal responsibility or is that a provincial or municipal responsibility?
It was actually an election promise that he would fund thousands more police. So
would the Liberals fund thousands more police?
Well, yes, we will. And in fact, a more comprehensive approach includes that we will fund more prosecutors and more judges, because one thing that happens is you can arrest someone for a crime, but if they are plugged up in the system for years, justice isn't being done.
But they're not plugged up in the system for years. What happens here, at least what seems to happen, is they go through the system and the judges that we have release them back onto the streets. I mean, that's where the problem seems to be.
It sometimes takes years for a person to go through the court system, and we are short on prosecutors and we are short on judges, and those things need to be addressed as well.
But the police I talk to say we arrest somebody, they get taken into the justice system, and they are promptly released back onto the street. We arrest them again, they're released, and this goes on and on and on.
Absolutely. So there's constant improvement that's needed, and the Liberals had offered to work hand-in-hand with the Conservatives to get the package of crime bills through the House. The Conservatives, Mr. Harper, decided to take a more partisan approach. He actually slowed those bills down in the previous sitting of the House in order to be able to score political points, because I think he's more interested in partisanship and votes than he is in the safety of Canadians.
You're listening to The Bill Good Show on CKNW News Talk 980.
Looking at a by-election coming on March 17th in Vancouver Quadra, Deborah Meredith is the Conservative Party candidate, Joyce Murray, Liberal, Rebecca Code, NDP, and Dan Grice, Green Party, and they are all in studio with me this morning. Rebecca Code, climate change, crime.
Yes.
Biggest issue in Quadra.
Well, crime has come up on the doorstep, and we all have the right to feel safe in our communities, and we all want our families to feel safe. And Vancouver does have a large amount of property crime. But what I haven't heard mentioned yet is the discussion on prevention of crime. And the NDP, we do have a policy that talks about prevention, policing, and punishment, but no one here has mentioned anything about prevention. my conservative colleague did talk about mental health and drug addiction, and that is absolutely one of the main causes of a lot of property crime in Vancouver. And the studies have been done. I mean, Pivot Legal Society has been excellent on their work on this issue. And this starts with housing. And we need to see more social housing, more supportive housing in Vancouver, and that will drop the crime rate. So, yes, we need more policing to...
Would you put that supportive housing in Quadra?
There is a proposal that's happening in Quadra for some supportive housing. The federal, provincial, and municipal government in Vancouver have all been loath to implement a housing strategy for years, and this has become a problem. So, yes, it's time for Vancouver to play catch-up.
But would you support supportive housing in Quadra?
I think that Quadra needs to do its fair share on this issue. The proposals are for small units, which have been shown by studies to be very effective ways of supporting people who are mentally ill and so on.
Dan Grice.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with Rebecca on this. The Conservative plan, violent criminals need to go into jail. We agree with that completely. But the Conservatives have now kind of sidelined the whole process, putting through legislation that's going to force the police to go after veterans who've got one marijuana plant sitting around their house and put them in jail for 6 months. That's just a waste of our police resources. We want to spend millions more on policing when we're making our...
Do you see any sign of that happening? I mean,
I hope this
veteran went to jail for having a marijuana plant.
Well, because this law hasn't been in place. This is legislation current before government that says if you're caught with as little as one plant, you're going to get 6 months in jail. These aren't the crimes that need to be taken seriously in society. And quite frankly, you know, more police and more is not going to cut down on, you know, property crime.
Let me get to some calls. 604-280-9898. Doug, good morning.
Hey, good morning. This climate change issue, nobody seems to, well, very few people have ever talked about the sun cycle. Every 13th session of the 11-year cycle, the sun puts out an extremely amount. It gets hotter. We've been through this before. Cut down a tree and look at the rings. Up north, or take a look at the ice coming off.
So you're basically saying that climate change is not an issue, or should not be an issue.
We have to modify how much soot we put in the air, and that CO2, trees grow faster when there's more carbon dioxide, or CO2.
So what is your point? What are you wanting to hear from these candidates or from any candidate?
To tell people honestly, instead of going for a tax grab and they can do nothing about the soot going in the air from China or from the Middle East or from the flares of all the oil wells. Everywhere you go, there's great big flares of oil wells putting stuff in there.
Everybody wants to speak to this.
Nobody addresses that.
I think this is Joyce. I think the scientific debate is behind us. There is a great deal of consensus on this issue worldwide. And so the key issue is how are we going to implement changes? And it's no longer about taking time to discuss if.
Does anybody disagree?
I don't disagree, but I think... Canadians actually, it's not a matter of just whether it's global warming or not. We actually want to see our energy, our industries efficient. We want to see a strong economy that is based on this new sustainable
aspect.
But what
do you say to the people who say, and there are a lot of people who do, Canada represents 2% of the problem around global warming. And if India and the United States and China don't do their part, why are we going to inflict a lot of pain on our industries and our consumers?
Well, what you say is if we can't expect people where countries where many of the people are earning less than $2 a day to lead Canada. Of course Canada should take a lead role. We're a prosperous, peaceful nation that can afford to do that.
And not just that.
Not the leader, we really do want to step up to the plate, and we don't want to wait for China. We don't want to be following India around waiting for them to get their act in gear. We have the resources.
Even if it makes us uncompetitive on world markets.
There are ways that Europe is dealing with exactly the same thing, and now they're looking at actually putting tariffs on goods coming into the country to make sure that any country that's dealing business with you now has to play by the same rules. And I think Canada needs to really take a look at how we can shape the whole world. We have the technology. We need to have the technology, enroll it, and share it. And the West has done a horrible job of sharing our technology with third world countries.
Rebecca Cohn?
This is also a fairness issue. Canada, our emissions per capita is one of the highest in the world. So to say that we don't have a responsibility...
Part of that's because we live in a northern climate.
No, I mean, you look at other northern climates and we're way ahead of Norway, we're way ahead of Greenland, Iceland, you name it. No, there are other ways of doing things, and we just have developed a society based on carbon guzzling, and that has to change. And we can afford to change it. We're an educated society, and we have a responsibility to change it.
Deborah Meredith.
I think Canadians do want action on pollution and emissions, but I think that they're tired of Canada making commitments that it has no intention or no program to actually fulfill. They want something that's realizable, that's realistic, and that won't devastate the economy.
I have to take a break.
You're listening to The Bill Good Program on CKNW News Talk 980. Once again, here is Bill Good.
604-280-9898, talking with four candidates in the Vancouver Quadra by-election that's coming March 17th. Deborah Meredith is with the Conservative Party, Joyce Murray, the Liberal Party candidate, Rebecca Code, the NDP, and Dan Grice, the Green Party candidate, and I welcome your calls to them. And we'll start with Brian. Brian, good morning.
Hi, you know, the one issue I haven't heard anything about is the war. It's kind of the thing that we want to forget about. It's a big debacle that no one wants to talk about south of the border with the election coming up. And my question to the four candidates is, where do you stand on what our mission is in Afghanistan, why our troops have guns and not, you know, shovels and band-aids there? What are we doing in Afghanistan, and what are we going to be doing in Afghanistan in the future?
I'd like to speak to that. This is Rebecca Code with the NDP. I think it's important to note that we've been in Afghanistan since 2001. So we've been there for almost 7 years, and it is more than reasonable to reassess what we're doing and if we're doing the right thing by staying. And our mission right now is not peacekeeping. We're not building infrastructure. We're on a seek-and-kill counterinsurgency mission. And now the reports are coming in, so what are the effects of our presence in Afghanistan? Well, violence has only increased, especially over the last year. Opium production has reached record volumes. The Taliban is still successfully recruiting.
What about the $330,000 in aid that we're putting into Afghanistan?
Well, a lot of that is going towards military defense. You can't deny that our main presence there is military. And the effect of that has actually been destabilizing. I'm not done yet.
Without guns.
And the effects of that are that we're sending our troops, Canadian troops, into a more unstable environment, and more of them are losing their lives. They're coming home injured, as we've just seen. And there's nothing to say that we're making life better for people in Afghanistan.
Joyce Murray wants to speak to this, and I'm curious, because we have to remember that it was the Liberal government that put troops in Afghanistan. So
that's correct.
Should they stay?
And no, they shouldn't. Our leader, Stéphane Dion, has been very clear about that since he became the leader and even before, and that's that we need to end our combat mission in Afghanistan. It was voted on to February 2009. We need to end it in February 2009, and to do that properly, we need to give clear notice to NATO. At that point, we can refocus, not abandon Afghanistan, because there are real issues around access to education, health care, women's equality that we can actually
help with. So if we leave, cut and run is what many people would say, if we do that, what happens to the women and children in Afghanistan?
We should maintain a diplomatic and a development role. We should maintain...
Can you do that without a strong military presence?
We need to have some military presence, possibly to protect the people that are working on building hospitals or schools.
Provided by whom?
By Canada. So we're not saying abandon. What we're saying is end the combat mission. And frankly, we need some of those troops in other parts of the world. Darfur, for example, is threatening to be an incredible disaster.
Threatening?
Genocide.
It has been a disaster that's been ignored for years now.
But I'm really puzzled by people who say this, because are our troops not going to be at just as much risk in Darfur as they are in Afghanistan? And why does Darfur take precedence over Afghanistan? Or is it just an excuse to get the troops out of Afghanistan? And I'm going to come to you now.
We're in a frontline combat mission in the most in the most active war zone in Afghanistan. We have taken our turn. Canadian troops have done a fantastic job, and we need to be rotated out of there and have NATO step up and find another country.
So you're not arguing the need for a presence. You're saying another country needs to step up.
We should not abandon Afghanistan. We should have a development role in Afghanistan as Canadians.
Well, no, I definitely agree with Joyce Murray that our Canadian troops are doing a fantastic job in Afghanistan, and I was lucky enough to be at the Jericho Garrison yesterday, and I talked to a couple of soldiers who were back from Afghanistan. One who had been there in 2002, and he was so regretful that he was too old to go back. Another who was a young university graduate in international relations from UBC who intends to go to law school, but his first choice is to convince his wife that it's a good idea for him to go back to Afghanistan. So they think we're doing a fantastic job. They're proud of what Canadians are accomplishing.
Yeah, and Grace, I want to give you a chance before we break to get in on this.
Yeah, I think Canadians are really tired of having NATO running around doing these missions. We really want to see our troops recommitted to the United Nations. The United Nations has a strong presence in central Afghanistan. The Green Party would love to keep that mission going, the Blue Helmet mission, and that's what's delivering the humanitarian supplies. You know, let's forget about NATO for a second. Let's recommit our nation to a strong United Nations, a strong peacekeeping force. This is what Canadians have been proud about and what the Green Party envisions.
Before we get to a break, Sam Frank is on the line. He is going to be a candidate in the by-election as well with the Canadian Action Party. And, Tim, can you bring Sam Frank onto the line?
Hello there. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Thank you for including me.
Strong feelings on any of the topics that have been raised so far?
Well, I do have a little bit of strong feelings about the issue of crime that you were talking about earlier. Your assertion that there is a constant, steady stream of criminals convicted of property theft who are given their freedom by the justice system and then engage in more theft, I believe that's flawed. I think that it's a small proportion of cases that are blown out of proportion by the media. And actually, the justice system does a decent job. The problem is people aren't willing to accept the fact that there are certain dangers that we live with in our life every day. And if you lived on the edge of a forest that had a cougar problem, and there were occasionally cougars coming out, you can either go in there and shoot every cougar in the forest and eliminate the population, in which case you'll put the ecosystem out of balance, and then eventually the forest will start to destabilize, and you'll have problems with other species that grow out of control. Or you can live with that danger and expect that it happens sometimes and believe that it is a part of your life. And it's the same with crime. Part of people being raised in the society that we live in is that there will occasionally be crimes. And if we let the fact that there is crime in our society make us feel that we have to have a police force that has an iron fist and is constantly pulling them in and then throwing them in jail to the limit of the legal abilities and filling all the prisons, then we're not going to effectively create a society where there is a balance.
So what are you saying? We're doing as much as needs to be done in terms of crime?
Yes, I believe that the Canadian justice system is quite effective. I don't think that promising to bring in thousands of more police into the Canadian force, into the Canadian police forces, will actually solve the crime problem. I don't believe that's the right way to attack it. I think that the police that we have do a very effective job as they are, and I have a tremendous amount of support for them.
And you think the courts are doing a good job, too?
Well, I believe that, obviously, sometimes the courts do make mistakes, and that is why your comment about the problem of repeat offenders comes up. And it is impossible to expect any system to be perfect, obviously. But to say that because you can pick out a couple cases where there have been mistakes, that now that is an indication that we need to double our police force, I think that's a flawed judgment.
Nobody's talked about doubling the police force. At the very, very most, I think the outgoing Chief Jamie Graham asked for about 150 more police in a force of just about 1,100. So that's about a 10% increase.
Okay, thank you. Okay, good. Well, that's... And obviously you believe that's supported by the...
Council turned it down. I'm just presenting the facts. I'm not stating that we need it or making a comment on that.
No, I understand. Okay, no, that's good. I was of the impression that they were asking for more than that. But
Sam Frank, Canadian Action Party, with Bill Good on CKNW News Talk 980. And we'll come back with you. And I welcome your calls to my guests. Kara.
Yes, good morning. I've enjoyed listening to the show.
Thank you.
I have taught at the University of British Columbia. and I'm a professor at Simon Fraser University. I've seen the difficulties that universities have been facing in terms of research and teaching as the lack of resources and funding has gone into universities over the last couple of years. And I noticed that the Liberal Party under Prime Minister Paul Martin was planning to call a conference on post-secondary education. However, I'm very disappointed to see that the issue of post-secondary education has fallen off the radar screen almost all the major parties. So I know that we've talked about climate change, and I think that for environmental education, technology, development, all of this requires investment, as I think, into post-secondary education. So I wondered, apart from dealing with tuition, I wondered what the candidates were planning to do about this important issue.
Excellent. Colin, I'm going to start with Denver Meredith on this, because I know that as well as being a graduate of McGill, she's also been a lecturer in commercial law at UBC's Sauder School of Business.
Yes, and I'm also a graduate of UBC Law School, and I've been at the Sauder School of Business now for 27 years. So I'm well aware of the demands for research funding, and I'm very committed to UBC, which is the economic engine of Quadra. And I think the Conservative government is very committed to adequate funding of research projects, and especially to funding, but not exclusively to funding of ones that can be commercialized, and they've been very successful in this regard.
George Murray?
Well, I would completely contest that statement, because when the Conservatives came in, there was approximately $5 billion of funding over 5 years that had been announced by the Liberals in their economic update in the fall of 2005 that was slashed by the Conservative government. And that was funding for research, it was funding for student access, it was funding for exchange programs, and on and on. So there has been a woeful lack of commitment by Stephen Harper to education, which I would contend is the major building block for a prosperous society and for social justice. And it's not just at the university level, though I appreciate, Kara, that that is very critical, but also early childhood education. I mean, Mr. Harper claimed that he would be creating 125,000 new spaces when he slashed the Liberals' funding for early childhood education. And as far as I know, nothing, zilch, has happened.
Rebecca Cohn?
Yes, education is such an important issue, and it's time for Canada to stop looking at a well-funded, a well-functioning education system from early childhood learning all through post-secondary education and whatever kind of post-secondary education. This is no longer a luxury. This is an investment. Now, it has never been more important for people to get an education, and it's never been harder. So, yes, it is important to fund the universities, and the NDP has been adamant on that. And when we've had the opportunity to act, we have acted, and that was in the last minority government, for example. Paul Martin needed some help at passing his budget, and so the NDP asked for some billions of dollars that were earmarked in corporate tax cuts to go towards education. That went towards infrastructure for early childhood learning, that went to the institutions of universities and colleges and technical schools and so on.
Dan Grice, the Green Party on education.
Yeah, the Green Party has a plan that will increase both core funding as well as look at reducing student debt. So we want to actually cut student debt to ensure students actually maintain in Canada after they graduate as well. And that's, I think that's one of the two things that universities are asking for. You know, make sure we're well-funded, but make sure our students can really afford to get through so that we don't compete with the labor market at every single chance.
Bill, good morning.
Yeah, Bill, I'd like to ask each of your guests how they feel we should handle the refugee issue of the Sikh temple in Surrey that the Canadian Border Services are currently dealing with.
Good question. The Lambar Singh case, very much in the news this morning. I'm going to ask each of you for a concise comment on how that should be handled, and I'm going to start with Joyce Murray.
I think there's a time for compassion, and there's a time for making exceptions, and this might be one of those times.
So you'd allow him to stay?
Yep.
Deborah Meredith.
Lambar Singh entered the country illegally under a forged passport. There's a deportation order out, and I think people want deportation orders to be enforced. Of course, you have to be sympathetic to his exact circumstances.
Dan Grice.
The Green Party would respect the sanctuary of the community that's holding him right now. We wouldn't, you know, as long as he's in the temple, as long as he's protected by that, I don't think anyone wants to see a police go in there and try to drag him out. So,
Rebecca Code.
there are deep Canadian values of fairness and compassion, and we're talking about a human being who's built a life in Canada, and so I think that needs to be respected.
Built a life in Canada?
Building a life in Canada.
So, Deborah Meredith, you're the only one among the four of you who would exercise the deportation order.
Well, I think because 200 people don't want somebody deported isn't necessarily a reason to make a decision not to deport after a deportation order has been issued.
Sam Frank, you're still on the line?
Yes, I am.
What would you do?
Well, I believe that it is important to make a distinction between the words illegal and immoral. Now, I don't know enough of the details of this specific man here. I can see a good argument for either case, but absolutely I think that the knee-jerk reaction of the public, that because the law says he shouldn't be here, that he shouldn't be here, is premature. And I think that there is a lot more consideration certainly involved in this case.
My thanks to all my guests. We're flat out of time. John Gale.